Okay, I think we would need to proceed because we've got a presentation that has to be made. The Auditor General of South Africa's office, Lakman, if you are ready, you will have to proceed. But just to indicate that those matters that outlined in terms of where we want to make follow-up, in terms of the corrupt practices that are identified, it will be very difficult for us to think that we can pin down the department as a Department of Public Service and Administration. But since we have to oversee the whole public service and administration, it therefore means that we'll move per department, you know, in terms of the areas that are identified, without necessarily saying that one department should account for the rest of other departments. It's not going to be possible. For instance, if we're going to be talking about the collusion between doctors and officials to defraud the medical scheme, it cannot be public safety and administration. And therefore, when we move along, we'll be moving according to what has been the outcome of our findings in Parliament, working with independent institutions, the report that came to, in front of us, and the oversight when we're calling all departments. But surely, it's not public service and administration that will account for other departments. Those departments will be called right here. We will interact with them. They will actually tell us themselves why didn't they complain with some measures. And that's how we're going to do the flow. So it shouldn't be misunderstood as if the accountability only lies with a particular department. That department might, of course, have to establish some systems, has to oversee some, you know, submission of organograms, has to check into compliance in submission, etc. But the fact of the matter, each and every department is accountable for its action, for its practices. If there are corrupt practices, each and every department will be accountable to that. I just thought it's important for one to correct that and put it in perspective while we'll be moving forward. Can we then proceed and have the Auditor General of South Africa doing a presentation that will be forecasting on irregular expenditure patterns?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Honourable Minister, the Chairperson, the Chair of the Public Service Commission, DGs, Public Service Commission, DPSA, Honourable Members, all protocols observed. My task today is a simple one. It's on the back of what we have already presented in the workshop. I just highlight in a few other aspects that we deem important for the knowledge of this committee to exercise their functions. Before I get into it, there's just a few things that I just want to just highlight. The first thing is, I'd like to acknowledge the leadership accountability for this process. And I think the importance of Honourable Minister taking the lead, being present in both the workshop and now, in actually driving the process, is very commendable. And I think we need to take account that for us to get these processes right, it is very important that the leadership actually take accountability. Okay, so I think, Minister, we acknowledge as an office and as an organization the role that you have taken in ensuring that this process gets the necessary priority. The second thing is the production and review of financial information. One of the key things in also getting this process in place and ensuring that we can root out corruption and we can root out the unnecessary evils is ensuring that the production and review of financial information actually happens. And on three levels. The first level is the relevance of that information. Second one is the timeliness of that information, and the third one is the quality of that information. That actually drives the decision making, and that is critical. And you will see that we've been also in our presentations pressing for the production of information, financial information, on a monthly basis. Now this means the production of that financial information on that basis needs to be such that it can enforce proper decision making by the executive and the leadership of those entities. The minister made reference to a pillar of the triangle being the environment. Now I just want to, without going into too much detail, just to highlight that point. And it's one of the critical points in actually getting this right. And that is the internal control environment that the minister is actually referring to. It is critical that in the sphere of administration, that the internal control environment is actually addressed. All those internal control weaknesses that exist, we identify them, and then we identify the risk, and then we put factors into place and controls into place to mitigate that risk. It is critical to get this process right. In so doing, we also need to focus on knowledge sharing, again, and skills development within the public sector. It is critical. Now, when we look at the various audits that we conduct, there's a lot of skills and knowledge that exist in the public sector. What we have found is that we need to enhance the flow of those skills from person to person. You'll see there's a lot of instances where you will get people that have the skills, but it's not transferred in a proper manner and one that is effective. And you'll see on a lot of the audits, for example, you will ask them, can we please have this information, or can we have an explanation to this information? And the response is, sorry, the person's on leave. Now, that shouldn't be a reason for the information not to be there, because you would expect that somebody else, that information that person contains and holds, is flowing to everybody else. So anybody at any point should be able to give you that information. And that is what we need to facilitate also in this process, is a transfer of skills and knowledge. But once we start getting that, we'll actually start rooting out corruption, because people will actually understand and know what other people are doing and what is happening. Okay. The next one is active visibility of leadership. We also identified that that is a critical role. It is not only about having a leader, and the effectiveness of that leader is also measured as how often the people that leader leads is actually visible. And that visibility also, to a certain extent, prevents people or makes people think twice about any corruptive behavior, because they know the active leadership is present in that organization. Governance structures and quality of information. Again, I take note of the portfolio committee being active in addressing this issue, the leadership of the chairperson. It is something that I know this portfolio committee holds close. And I think it's also important, Chair, that we look at, when we're looking at the overall exercise, that we ensure that this is also rolled out on a provincial level. We are focusing on it at this point at the national, and putting the processes into place, but I think we need to make sure there's processes in place also to support and assist the provincial governance structures and the provincial leadership to ensure that we root it out completely. The quality of information share that you and your committee and other committees as such also get is essential. We need to make sure and ensure that the information that is provided by the Public Service Commission, by DPSA, and other institutions is of the highest quality that facilitate the decision-making and the policy decision-making that we do. And Chair, I think one of the important things is, why is this so important to us as an office? Besides the reasons the Honourable Minister has highlighted, one of the important things is that we were going to be issuing a report and an opinion on performance information or performance objectives. And that ties directly to service delivery. And I think it's critical, because the ability of any entity to deliver on service delivery and on its mandate is directly linked to the resources that it has available to it. And I think this is part of the process of ensuring that those resources are not abused. And that is why it becomes so critical that we protect those resources of the entities, departments, and of the country. Chair, on that note, I'm now going to go into the irregular expenditure and give you the details on it, and then I'll conclude. Okay, Chair, first, I would like us just to refer to slide one, which is our reputation promise, and that is the Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate And as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our constitutional democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector, through auditing, thereby building public confidence.
We move to slide 13.
Okay, let's go to slide 13. Chair, the slide I'm going to refer to, and as
sorry,
I said,
sir.
I'm...
Sorry, could you just direct us which document are you looking at?
The slide presentation.
Which one? There's got three documents from the chair.
Chair, I'm referring to the presentation. If I might, I'll just go to the first page. It's called PFMA Audit Outcomes 2009-10. Okay, I'm now going to go to page 13 of that document. And the reason for me to go to page 13 is the focus for today's discussion is around irregular expenditure. So I'm not going to take you through the other content of the document. We have been through it in the workshop previously. Chair, on page 13, you will see that the findings on procurement and contract management resulting in irregular expenditure. And you will see at the top five findings on procurement and contract management, you'll see for the departments, including the National Revenue Fund, the three parts quotation not invited and reasons not recorded and approved, the number was 15, which represented 44% and which represented an amount of 5,250,168. Preferential point system not applied in procurement greater than 30,000 Rand. There were 7 instances which represented 21%, and that was 9,409,407. Comparative bidding deviation not justified was 6, and that represented 18%, representing an amount of 9,442,527. Awards to suppliers who failed to provide valid tax clearance certificates was 6, and that represented 18%, a total of 27,225,791. And the three prize quotations not invited, deviations not justified, were 5, and that represented 15%, which was 2,229,983. So that represents the department. I'm going to go into the detail and give you further detail on that. I'm going to first give you the slides and give you the actual figures. The second one was on the public entities, including trading constitutional institutions and other types of entities. And that three price quotation not invited, reasons not recorded and approved, again was 26, representing 15%, at a total of 41,050,126. Preference point system not applied in procurement greater than 30,000 Rand was 15 and was 9% and was 44,369,464. 500,000 Rand with no competitive bidding process, reasons not recorded and approved, was 15 cases which represented 9%, a total of 118,417,655. And awards to suppliers who failed to provide valid tax clearance certificates was 12, 7% at 110,999,012. And three price quotations not invited, deviations not justified. Chair was 12 cases with 7% and 22,268,419. Chair, if we go to the next slide, and this is findings on procurement and contract management, interest in suppliers. You will see here it gives the details of interest identified in suppliers, the employees of departments, number of entities in departments were 15, and number of instances were 59. And Chair, if you look further, it will say close family members of employees, we identified 2, and the number of instances were 15. And close family members of other role players in senior in supply chain management process not employed by departments was one department with the instance of 14. Chair, I'm not going to look at the non-compliance or irregularities identified where interest identified. I'm going to go to the next slide. But rather let me, for the sake of time, It actually gives some commentary to what I've been talking about. And to start that process here, I think it's appropriate that what I first do is take you through the definition of irregular expenditure for the benefit of those. Irregular expenditure, other than unauthorized expenditure, incurred in contravention of or that is not in accordance with the requirement of any applicable legislation, including the PFMA, the State Tender Board Act, and any provincial legislation providing for procurement procedures in that provincial department. Now, this is the back on which those figures we actually produce, we actually conduct the procedures. Now, here, I think the next thing that becomes then important in this presentation, Chair, is if I then take you through, when I describe the slide, I'm going to now give you the notes behind it. And we'll look at slide 13 again. And these are the findings on procurement and contract management that has resulted in irregular expenditure. And the main areas of non-compliance for national departments were, first of all, the three price quotations were not invited and the reasons not recorded and approved. And in terms of practice note 8 of 2007-2008, the accounting officers authority should invite and accept written price quotations for requirements up to an estimated value of $500,000 or $500,000 from as many suppliers as possible that are registered on the list of prospective suppliers. If it is not possible to obtain at least three written price quotations, the reason should be recorded and approved by the accounting officer authority or his or her delegate. This requirement was not complied with by the following departments. Chair, I'm going to name those departments. Arts and Culture, Communication, Corporate Government and Traditional Affairs, Correctional Services, Defense and Military Veterans, Health, Human Settlements, Justice and Constitutional Development, Public Works, the Presidency, Water Affairs and Parliament, Mineral Resources, and Sports and Recreation. Okay, so Chair, that is the background to the figures that I've just presented. Now, I'm going to go to the next one, which is the preference point system not applied in procurement greater than 30,000 Rand. In terms of Section 2A of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework, Act No. 5 of 2000, an organ of state must determine its preferential procurement policy and a preferential point system must be followed. The following departments entered into transactions exceeding 30,000 Rand without applying the preferential point system. Again, Chair, I'll name them. Communications, Defense and Military, Veterans, Justice and Constitutional Development, Labor, Public Service and Administration, Public Works, and Water Affairs. So the next one is the comparative bidding deviations not justified. So this is where you deviate from your tender procedures and chose not justified. In terms of Treasury Regulation 16A6.4, if in a specific case it is impractical to invite competitive bids, the accounting officer or authority may procure the required goods or services by other means, provided that the reasons for deviating from inviting competitive bids are recorded and approved by the accounting officer or authority. Practice Note 6 of 2007-2008 states that the provision of Treasury Regulation 16A6.4 is intended for cases of emergency where immediate action is necessary, or if the goods and services required are produced by or available from sole service providers. The following departments deviated from competitive bidding without justifiable reasons. There are six cases, or six: Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs, Health, public service and administration, public works, the presidency, and water affairs. So the next one, which referred to awards to suppliers who fail to provide valid tax certificates, clearance certificates, in terms of Treasury Regulation 16A 9.1C, the accounting officer must reject any bid from a supplier who fails to provide written proof from the South African Revenue Service that the supplier either has no outstanding tax obligations or has made arrangements to meet outstanding tax obligations. The following six departments awarded bids to suppliers who failed to provide valid tax clearance certificates: Corporate Governance, Government and Traditional Affairs, Defence and Military Veterans, Justice and Constitutional Development, Public Works, the Presidency, Sports and Recreation. So the last category was a three-price quotation not invited and deviation not justified. In terms of Practice Note 8 of 2007-8, accounting officers and authorities should invite and accept written price quotations for requirements up to an estimated value of 500,000 rand from as many suppliers as possible that are registered on the list of prospective suppliers. If it is not possible to obtain at least three written price quotations, the reason should be recorded and approved by the accounting officer authority or his or her delegate. For the following departments who did not invite three price quotations as required, the deviation was not justified: Defence and Military Veterans, Justice and Constitutional Development, the Presidency, Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs, Home Affairs, Minerals Resources. So that's the breakdown of the irregular expenditure and the details. So I just want to take you through also. So what I'm going to describe now is for irregular expenditure, the top five departments that actually incurred irregular expenditure and the categories to which that's actually related and the amounts. The first one is the Department of Defense, and it's related to supply chain management related issues. And that was 141,845,000 rand. Compensation of employees, 858,872,000 rand. And other irregular expenditure of 157,000, giving you a department total of 1,874,000 rand. And a percentage of total irregular expenditure recorded for total government then represented for departments 43%. Department of Justice and Constitutional Development was the second. It was 778,971,777 rand for supply chain management related issues. Sorry, this is not contained, it's the background to the slides. I'm giving the background to the slides. And under other expenditure that was irregular was an amount of 26,415,534 rand. A total for Department of Justice and Correctional Development was then 805,387,311 rand, which represented 35% of total irregular expenditure. Department of Home Affairs was third, with an amount of 321,640,000 rand, that represented 14% of the total irregular expenditure. Department of Arts and Culture had incurred 60,771,000 rand, that represented 3%. Department of Public Works was 27,402,000 rand, which represented 1%. And the other 19 departments remaining in total was 82,215,825 rand, which represented 4%. For public entities chair, the road management Road Traffic Management Corporation with 360,879,704 yen, represented 23% of the total irregular expenditure for the category of public entities. Second was the National Prosecuting Authority with 190,217,000 yen, which was 17%. Property Management Trading Entity with 264,180,000 yen, which was 17%. The State Information Technology Agency with 214,906,769 yen, represented 14%. Cipro with 95,830,616 yen, represented 6%. And the other 56 public entities remaining with 301,440,576 yen, represented 24%. Again. Sorry, Chair.
Can you kindly name the third institution and the one that you just named now?
Sorry, Chair, on the public entities?
Yes.
Okay. I'll just go through them quickly again. The first one was the Road Traffic Management Corporation with 360,879,704 yen. Second one was the NPA, National Prosecuting Authority, with 190,217,000. The third one was the Property Management Trading Entity with 264,180,000 yen. The fourth one was CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, with 214,906,769 yen. The fifth one was CIPRO with 95,830,616 yen, and the other 56 public entities remaining was 301,440,576 yen. Okay. Chair, irregular expenditure that was due to non-adherence to supply chain management and compensation of employee processes amounting to 2.3 billion rand. In 08-09, it was 529.8 million, was incurred by 24 departments, and to 1.6 billion, 08-09 was 756 million by 61 public entities. This is the totals I'm giving you now. This represents an increase in the incurrence of irregular expenditure of by departments of 41% and 45% by public entities. Chairperson, I think on that note, conclude my presentation. Thank you for the invitation to give you the statistics. We've done a lot of the background, and I thought it would be fruitless me going through all that background again. So I wanted to rather give the committee and yourself the meat of the information. I believe that is what you were actually seeking, Chair. So thank you, and Honourable Minister, thank you. And Honourable Chair of the Commission, thank you.
Yes, and also it's in follow-up from the overall presentation that you did on the 3rd of November, detailed. But of course, zooming in, we needed that kind of a focus for the discussion that is taking place today. Thank you for the presentation. Just to indicate that if you look at the work that had been identified by Parliament on our follow-up in terms of issues that relate to anti-corruption, committee members, it actually shows how much work do you want, because we do need to interact with all these departments now in terms of all these areas. Can I then allow you to, if you want to, engage in discussions on the matter that is already before us, and if there are any takers, starting with Honourable Williams as the first person. Is there anyone who wants to follow? I take it that you are still chewing on the information that you are getting. Honorable Msima, Honorable Ramadlakane, Honorable Dreyer will go in that order. Starting with you, Honorable Dreyer, you'll be last.
Thanks, Chairperson. It looks like the total irregular expenditure from national departments and public entities is around 3.9 billion rand. I'd like to know, how much money has the executive budgeted to combat this? I mean, for instance, we got all these plans and stuff, but I mean, it's a huge thing. I mean, 3.9 billion rand is nearly the size of its own little industry, this irregular expenditure. So it's almost like it's a sector of the economy now. I mean, even if we spent a billion rands on this, I mean, we would still save ourselves 2.9 billion rands. So we must look at how we're going to combat this with some serious money involved, because this is huge. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Sima.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Ministers, all protocol observed. These are frightening figures, Chair. And one wonders if the punitive measures that are taken against the culprits are harsh enough. Earlier on, when we were addressed by the Honourable Minister, he talked about the disciplinary proceedings, which are very protracted. He talked about the disturbing factor that people are suspended with pay. Now, perhaps if they were suspended without pay, then the hearings wouldn't be protracted, and therefore the instrument would be harsher and even more deterring. Now, the minister talked about a number of triangles. I'm more interested in the one where he said the Public Service Commission is a custodian of good governance, and his department is a facilitator, and the president provides political authority. Now, we have often heard the president addressing the nation that this suspension with pay is going to stop. Now, I just wonder, how far are we from implementing that? Because the minister said, if there is, for instance, labor legislation which prohibits that, then he will come here to this parliament to do something about it. So unless these people are going to get some harsher punitive deterrent measures, this will continue, and really it's going to run this country to the ground. So I'm just very concerned about how punitive are the measures to combat all this. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Ramadlakane.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Yeah, I agree that the figures are quite shocking. But let me ask two questions. The AG's office used the words in the descriptions of these three categories, that is unjustifiable reasons for to have asked for three quotations. So you use the words unjustifiable reason. So I want to understand the words that use unjustifiable reason. What then follow as the consequences of the findings? And I'm asking that question in relation to an understanding whether in the findings, whether there has been other recommendation that would have been made by AG with respect to those figures. For an example, if you see that the Department of Defense, there's this X number, would haven't used the words unjustifiable reason, would you then later in the recommendation recommend a process to regularize? In other words,
whether you would then say that there must now be a process of condonation to now regularize this. I'm asking that in the context of the existing PMFA and asking what then is the next step in terms of what kicks in once we have done given this recommendation. Is what kicked in is a provision of the PMFA that kicks in that follows once this has been tabled, or is other provision in terms of the framework in dealing with the corruption? So, and your role, is that the role ended once that has happened, and therefore it becomes the responsibility of the next arm of government to do what has to be done, what has to be done. I'm asking this question because you may find, therefore, having read the definition of the irregular expenditure, that later there is a process of regularizing, which then requires a condonation. So I want to understand the weight of the words that you use in the determination, and then what's then the consequences that follow that particular word. So it's a general question without necessarily going into detail. It's really the issue of condonation, the recommendation that you would have made, haven't found that, and what is then the consequences that follow. Is it the consequences of a PMFA that kick insofar as those irregular, or the other consequences of regularization, which is informed, becomes a condonation issues? And if it's a condonation issues, would that require that there is a substantiation of what you would have found to be unjustifiable? I don't know whether I'm making myself clear on the question. It's quite muddled up, but I'm sure you're following what I'm asking the questions. That's great. Thanks.
Okay, Honorable
Dreyer.
Madam Chair, yes, it's the presentation, the facts and figures contained therein actually make for very depressing reading. You know, if you care about this country and the way it's going, you would become extremely depressed when you're confronted with this kind of information, because unfortunately it confirms the extent of mismanagement and wrongful spending and theft and corruption from the public purse that's taking place in the country. There's really, it looks like there's a wholesale looting of the public coffers taking place here. And if we don't stop now, when we're going the way of a failed state, we're really at the precipice of a failed state, and we have to turn that thing around now. There's a lack of respect and a lack of compliance with laws and regulations. And I just want to repeat what I said earlier on, the remedy is actually political will and strong leadership that will enforce management. There's no other fancy things and so on. We've just got to get back to basics. And we know that it can succeed because it is succeeding in certain provinces where we have an alternative government. So really it's the time from the top for strong political leadership and a demonstration of political will. And that's my message for today. I have no further questions. It's perfectly clear. We can see exactly where we stand. Thanks.
Honorable Bikani.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I'd like to go back to one of the committee's conclusions in terms of the strategy we had, where we, Minister, we also have our own triangle. And I think that triangle also needs to be enforced in some way or the other through this Committee of Public Service and Administration, where we said that we actually need to endorse some form of action in oversight amongst ourselves as Parliament, led by Public Service and Administration Committee, the Auditor General of South Africa, as well as the Public Service Commission. Now, perhaps that could also be another form of saying or approach of coming closer to a remedy in us instituting oversight. But most probably would need to also look at legislative processes as to what best can be done by the committee. Then the second point is that it does seem as though also as a committee we need to come to a point where we are now concerned with more cross-cutting issues of departments and irregularities. And based on the reports that we've received, it does now force us into future planning, especially within NEXT. Instead of us saying the Department of Public Service and Administration is one of our entities, we should now start going into the various departments that have been indicated in terms of irregularities and look at processes that can be followed, also in terms of oversight of what best we can do to give attention to the frightening report that we just got. Then, Chair, I wish we've got a document here that we, I mean, a two-page document that we got. I wish we, the AG could have spoken to it, which is titled Listing of Audit Findings Raised on Common IT Focus Areas, because I'd be interested to know the basis of the figures around the focus areas and the state of affairs as this report stands. It's not saying much or indicating as to what attention we should give to it, if it's possible. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I see there are more hands. Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate once more this report, very transparent and also accountable. I think as the African National Congress, you know, when we came into power, we said we should be transparent and be accountable. And as such, I think we are upholding that principle. But, Chairperson, it does not mean that when we raise these matters, we are trying to hide something. We are trying to tell the public this is the state of affairs as government. Now, on this issue...
Sir, I was just requesting Honourable Bikani to switch off the mic.
Oh, sorry. I think I take the point, Chairperson, because look, the AG is doing its work, and I want to bite on what Honourable Bikani is saying, the transversal matters where we need to find one another, other committees, because also there's a thin line because between us and SCOPA in what they are doing in holding other committees and departments accountable for in terms of what is, because they will present a report, but surely it rests with each and every committee to deal with these matters, especially on the issue of the quarterly, on around this matter of the internal controls and the quarterly reports that should be made by committees like ourselves, because I could sense that also PSA is not immune from what has been raised here. So surely next year we'll have to have quarterly reports so that we first we'll monitor the behavior of finances in that regard. My last take, Chairperson, is the question of the PFMA itself. If there are loose ends, which is not very strong in the management and accountable to the accounting officers who are supposed to manage the department properly, there are certain clauses that the DGs are supposed to behave in a particular way. So that if they are not following that, surely somebody must hold them accountable. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure, lastly, it will be Honorable Nyekem.
Thank you very much, Shepard. This is my second meeting of the Portfolio Committee since the ruling party deployed me here. Just two things, Madam Chair. The first one is that I think I need to educate myself to understand the culture of how we as members react to presentations. I must say I was a little bit disturbed when in particular the AG office was making a presentation for a member of parliament. In the middle of that presentation, jump
so high, saying the same culprits, the same culprits, the same culprits. I think we need to conduct ourselves, in particular, in front of people who are responsible of implementing decisions that were taken as parliament. I think I was a little bit disturbed. I nearly called that honourable member into order, but I then said, no, this is my second meeting. Let me just raise it, because that is a demonstration of not respecting the chairperson of the meeting. That's the first point. That's the first point I want to raise. The second point, chairperson, is that listening to the presentation from the AG's office and also the comments that has been made by my colleagues before me, that takes me back to what the minister said earlier when he spoke about the three triangles. You see, he raised these three triangles. Why these three triangles? But now when this presentation is made, because at that time I couldn't understand how these three triangles will work, but then now it became clear to me as to why the three triangles that the minister spoke about earlier, and also taking into account what you said even before the AG's office made the presentation, to say what is it that we have to do as parliament, because the point that we're emphasizing, which I think even the minister emphasized it more than once, was to say in sharpening our tools, in charging our batteries, there is no single structure that has to do everything, including us as parliament. So that's why I'm saying I was a little bit not knowing what is happening when one of the members was supposed to be sharpening the tools. I mean, it's a tool to be sharpened and a battery to be charged, and then it's doubling when it is not supposed to do what it has to. I thought, let me just raise those points, Madam Chair, but appreciating the report that says to us, these are the areas which we need to go back and say, how do we make sure that the three triangles which the minister has spoken about earlier, how do we make them to work as parliament? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Honourable Nyakembe. And thanks for raising that issue, because I sometimes do see it happening and I don't really like it, but I ignore it most of the time just to save time and proceed with work. But surely it does happen often. We'll have to just look at that and move forward while we know how to actually conduct ourselves. Can we then have the responses? Okay, Honourable Dreyer.
Madam Chair, with the greatest of respect, there's no problem in that regard. You know that, and I think everybody here knows that. So absolutely no disrespect to you. But just to help the new member, he's new in Parliament, I just want to say welcome in Parliament, and interjections is absolutely part of what happens in Parliament. So he will learn. But great respect to you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I know he's not a new member at all. He just joined the committee now. He's been very active in Labour, and we are grateful that we have an additional member. But surely we do definitely have to look to our conduct members. It shouldn't be raised as an element of our questions on our side. Let's just do it. We are able, I know. I'm going to request you to do a response from the Auditor General's side.
Honourable Minister, committee members, all protocol observed, thank you. Chair, on the first question that was raised, I don't think I'm in a position to answer that on how much the executive has budgeted to combat this instances. I think that's something that maybe the the executive or the department need to respond to. The second one on the punitive measures taken and the suspension of pay, I don't think I'm again in a position to respond to that. The third one, however, the unjustifiable reason, as it was put across, I was going to take that back a step because it's actually an interesting thing. It actually comes from the Treasury regulation, Honourable Member, where if you do not follow the required tender processes as stipulated by supply chain management, then your Treasury regulation 16A6.4 kicks in. And it says that the accounting officer or authority may procure the required goods or services by other means, provided that the reasons for deviating from inviting competitive bids are recorded and approved by the accounting officer or authority. So then it goes on to elaborate in Practice Note 6 of 2007-2008 that was issued by National Treasury, which states that the provision of TR 16A6.4 is intended for cases of emergency, where immediate action is necessary, or if the goods and services required are procured by or available from sole service providers. Now, for that to be allowed, the reasons for that deviation has to be well documented, and it has to be justifiable reasons. So it has to describe what an emergency is, what the emergency was, why there was this urgent need for a deviation, etc. And obviously we can understand why, because it's a compliance issue. So it was in these cases where we could not see evidence of those justifiable reasons. We could not get evidence of actual what was the reasons for these deviations, etc. So it's on the back of that. Chair, the condemnation of that irregular expenditure, again, I won't be able to comment to that. However, I can say there is specific requirements in terms of the legislation as to the process for that condemnation. There has to be, for example, an investigation by the authority to actually get and gather the reasons as to why there was deviations, etc. Okay. So there is a process that's documented in your Treasury regulations also as to how that condemnation goes about. And Chair, that was the one question that I think that actually applies to the office. If there is any others, we will go through, except for the IT. We've put it up. I've put up the slide for IT. And I will take you quickly through it with the permission of the Chair. So if we go through this slide, it actually talks on the findings of our information systems audit. Now, Chair, what is important to this is, remember we spoke about three key issues, and those three key issues to actually ensure that we can manage and control the internal control environment. Okay.
Are you just found out? We need some few minutes.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, basically what it is we spoke about the three key areas being the leadership, the financial management systems. Your IT systems forms part of that. So you need those. You need to actually work on these because it forms part of that internal control environment. These were the weaknesses we identified. Quickly, I'll just run through them. Lack of IT governance framework. Okay.
Yeah, actually, there are issues that maybe Honourable Dreyer did raise, but because of time constraints, the Minister wanted to actually touch on those issues. I know that now it's one, members might want to leave, but actually the Minister wanted to just quickly get zoom into issues, but Honourable Fanskalk-Vig will actually. Honourable Minister.
Honourable Chair, with your permission, we can pick up this at some other point and hand over to.
Okay, in the light that Honorable Dreyer has gone, Lachman, I'm sure, let me allow you to just finalize the point we're making.
Okay, Chair, I think it's quite important because the first one is if you look at departments, we're saying that 23 of the departments had a lack of IT governance frameworks to direct the positioning of IT. Resource requirements, risk and internal control management, which represented 85%. This is quite a high percentage. And with the public entities, the number was 28, which represented 56%. The second one is inadequate security management controls to prevent unauthorized access to the operating systems. Examples, Windows, Linux, etc., that grant access to the application systems. In the departments, it was 26 departments, which represented 93% of the departments. So in the public entities, it was 42, which represented 84%. So significant to these is in the combat of, obviously, your fraud and your corruption, you want to make sure that your systems are secure. So you need that needs to be tied up, becomes crucial. Talks directly to your weaknesses in your internal control environment that can then be indicators that lead to the conduciveness of fraud and error in your environment. On the next one was the inadequate user access controls to detect and prevent unauthorized access, capturing and approval of transactions on an application system that are used to prepare the financial statements. Examples there was BAS, Purcell and Logos. And here there were 26 departments again, representing again 93%. Very high. And for the public entities was 43, representing 86%, which is again very high. Then a lack of a business continuity and disaster recovery plan that would ensure the availability of financial and performance information in instances of data loss or disaster. Departments, it was 23, which represented 85%, and on the public entities it was 29, which represented 58%. So significant to this, with the exception of the public entities on the last one, you'll see that it's greater than 75%, which, talking back to your control environment, needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. So I'm not going to go into more time constraints. I'll leave it at that. Okay, thank you.
I think those details, we definitely will take them forward. They need enough time, sufficient time for us to engage with. They might paralyze particular areas which we're interested to see them functioning properly. And therefore, it's also a matter that we cannot exhaust in a minute. We really want to engage with the department concerned quite thoroughly. The minister has noted all the issues that had been raised. What I will then request at this point in time, because we will be following up, I'm going to request the minister to do a response on the issues that are raised, including the questions that the members have actually posed, which are to the attention of the minister at this point in time. Honorable Baloyi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. When the AG presented this report to the executive, firstly to the Minister of Public Service and Administration and the Minister of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, we instructed that they actually give the department, because in the report it was just top five and not actually mentioning those departments. So that we will then be in a position to act. So that you don't have the AG presenting reports that give a picture like this and you just don't address this issue. And we then said, you see, we should find ourselves in the interaction that I'll talk to later on. That you are actually not waiting for the time that reports like this are presented, but you are you have a facility that you are able to pick up on these things going forward. It's just that those who qualified selective listeners, I'm talking qualified, not like when you talk of a qualified audit report. I'm talking about professional selective listeners. We will not pay attention to the details you give when you talk about what you are saying, this is what you are actually doing itself. It's not a requirement, but it will be very helpful that when a presentation like this is given, more especially if there has been interaction with the executive organ of state, to indicate as to what are the commitments to deal with this issue. Because it will appear like a very easy takes for excited participants in listening in these issues, when the government in actual fact is actually dealing with these things. I've been saying that this is public accountability, because it's a public meeting. At times when your organs of state, it's necessary that you touch base as you come and account in public, so that you take on board. Don't hide. Transparency says you will do this. Don't hide, but also comment about, talk about the plans that are there. You actually talk about this issue. These are things that a state entities will be in a position to deal with coming forward. I raised this point earlier on with the chairperson of the Public Service Commission. To them say, maybe coming forward here, it will be necessary that we talk to the president, because we represent the state, all of us. And I then said that will never compromise the independence, because the issue of democracy and oversight is not about the question of trapping. It's a question of accountability. And accountability in a democracy has to actually be all inclusive. If it's not inclusive, then it becomes one-sidedness, the extreme of which is hypocrisy. Those are things that we definitely need to actually address. This. Now, Honorable Williams, it's true that we need to deal with this huge figure. And of course, when this was presented to the executive, exactly we then said, no, that we need to actually deal with something. Which is an indication, of course, of saying that you need to do something more than what you are doing at the current moment. When I introduced in my presentation the issues around the introduction of the unit, it was definitely meant to then say that this is how we are doing things differently. You can't afford, Honorable Dre has left, he so much loves the institutions that are there and the practices that he doesn't want anything changed. If we don't change what obtains now, the reality is a perpetuation of the situation as the report of the AG is indicating. I'm not sure if that is what she's interested in. And if that is it, of course, she owes the nation to tell us to what is the reason for doing that. That's why I wanted to respond in her presence, so that it doesn't appear like I'm shy of a face. Now, Honorable Msiman, you are very right. You are very right to then say, do we have harsh treatment for this issue? And you are very right to say that in my presentation, I was talking about an intervention so that we should have that harsh treatment. That's an observation that I wish if we had seed to plant in people's ears to listen, we'll try to do that in Honorable Dreyer's ears. So that we then deal with these issues to then say, we don't become selective, we are public representatives. A public representative has to represent the public and do that in a manner not just being opportunistic on issues, to just blow the whistle, even when it's clear that we're doing something. We need harsh action. We need a coordinated action. You don't want a situation where one department will be lenient on this issue, the other department appear like taking leave when it comes to have to take a decision that they have to do. You need a coordinated effort to deal with this thing. The unity is actually meant to deal with that. The president's decision to introduce an interministerial committee was actually meant to address and arrest this thing. And this is what we are saying. Public representatives of note should actually support this process, soil their hands, not become passengers in driver's seat. You choose to be a passenger or to be a driver. And once you choose to be a driver, then drive. So that and then as you drive, you steer the vehicle to the right direction. We are then saying we must do things differently. And it takes more than government. It takes more than the executive. It goes to the level of public representatives present here to actually soil their hands and do that. So you are very right. You are very right, Honorable Msimang, that the president has said suspension with pay should be addressed. When the president said that, the Minister of Public Service and Administration then said, what is it that we need to do to implement that? We introduce the mechanism that I spoke about earlier today. And would then say all those who agree with that should be seen to embrace this move and not become operating like a political opportunist. We need to actually address these things. This is a challenge for us. If we don't address these issues, we are sure that we will forget to achieve different results. We will end up in a situation as painted by the report of the AG. And that's not what we want, unless if there are those who think they'll benefit out of it. I'm sure on Honorable Ramasagan's question, the office of the AG responded on issues around unjustifiable, state of unjustifiability, the condemnations and all those things. I think the question raised in the intervention by Honorable Ramasaka to then say, yes, the AG submits this report, so what? What then gets done out of it? We need to then to then act. That's why I say the AG presented this to the executive. And having presented this to the executive, we need to address these things. And we need to address this clearly to make sure that these matters are addressed and not waiting for the time of reporting, but actually dealing with these things right in time. If there is an issue of quotation, that's no invitation for three code as a requirement. I indicated there was one honorable member who posed like my bodyguard when I was being interviewed by the media, providing her own answers to the answers that I was giving. Unfortunately, the honorable member has left. Now, when we then said part of this unit is to make sure that electronically we'll then say we are going to record all procurements so that right at the point when the procurement is done, it's recorded electronically. So that centrally, at the click of a button, you will know that there is a procurement that has been recorded today. And this procurement has been done. So you can check as to the requirement for getting quotations right from the time it happens. This is an intervention that has never been done before. This is an intervention which is an improvement in trying to address these things. It is just that we might, some of us, position our own ears to listen to what we expect. That becomes an unfortunate position. We are dealing with all that we are doing to address this situation because we then say, we need to put this behind us. We don't actually want this kind of this tendency in our public. And we're going to continue. No one will stop us. If it's a piece of legislation that says give someone some sort of power to believe that, no, I'm protected, we'll amend that kind of thing. Because we want to do things differently. I indicated, and of course my bodyguard, in quotes, self-appointed, was behind me also mumbling that the answers I was giving was not correct. When I said when we launch, we have an agreement already with the AG to to then say there are violations that have already been handled, and those violations, you find that at the court of law, there is finality in terms of those cases. The SIU also the same. The treasurer also the same, that there are financial misconduct. Areas where you have violations of PFMA, some people have been found guilty by the court of law, but administratively nothing has been done. Then once we then launch this unit, they as partners are going to hand over those cases to us, and we're going to actually follow that up. If this is not an intervention that shows that we understand, as the President said, that you need a public administration that understands where the people are and the challenges that those people are, if this is not a reflection of that, then I think something else maybe needs to be done. But we are convinced that we are on the right direction. Honorable Member Dreyer, in her own imagination, indicated that something is wholesale. You know, when you talk of wholesale, you're actually talking about a total state of chaos. You are actually even removing reason. What the AG said, justifiable and stuff like that, unjustifiable. You know, a total state of decay. Then you reach that particular state, and we're not going there. We'll actually address these things. Now, she raised an issue that there is a need for political will, which we actually agree. I think I took more than 20 minutes demonstrating, explaining the political will in action in this country. Firstly, to pass a constitution with Chapter 9, Section 195, that then introduces, amongst other things, transparency, is nothing other than expression of political will. And you protect the institution. The AG writes report, they do their audit findings, writes report. That is an indication that there is protection of the Chapter 9 institutions to do their work to make sure that there is clean governance and provide support. And once the report is provided, we act on those reports. It's a very clear indication of political will. It is political will for the President to appoint an IMC. It is political will for the Minister of Public Service and Administration to introduce an anti-corruption unit. It is a political will for the Minister of Finance to actually coordinate a multi-agency mechanism or package to deal with these issues. That is political will. What remains to be seen and for all of us to support is the implementation of those interventions that they are coming with, because political will is very clear like that. That's the situation that we need. Maybe this portfolio committee chairperson, we might one day have to spend, I won't delegate, I'll come and present it myself. Even if we say tomorrow, I can present. Even if we extend by 3 hours now, I can do that. We need to explain the powers that the Minister of Public Service and Administration has in terms of the Public Service Act. We need to explain the powers that the Public Service Commission has in terms of the Public Service Commission Act and the Constitution. And as we talk about those things, we will then talk about the limitations. We need to talk about the powers that executive or executing authorities have vis-a-vis the accounting officers, drawing parallels between the Public Service Act and the Public Finance Management Act. We need to do that because there is conflation of the rules that are there. We need actually a lecture. We need to talk about issues of intergovernmental relations so that if as a portfolio committee of public service and administration, actually we are at the center to even be the committee that should be best explaining in terms of the rule, the doctrine and the practice of the separation of powers. Because if we do that, we will then find ourselves in a position where our intervention comes spot on without suggesting that it is not safe for self-appointed bodyguards of ministers. We need to actually deal with these issues and address them, and we are available to actually come forward to deal with them. Ms. Bigani, Honorable Member, it is true that, and this talks to the point I was raising, the issue of the legislative mandate. Understanding it so that even when we say we review, we need to then be guided by those issues. Honorable Suga, you raised the issue of PFMA. I actually addressed it as I was dealing with those things. Honorable Nyakembe, clearly the 3 points you made. You know, the three triangles issue talks to all what we're actually talking about. In fact, the Public Service Commission and the AG, if they knew I was going to talk about the three angles, the triangle, the three of them, all their presentations would have been summed into one triangle, because that's exactly what it is. We have a role to play, and all of us, of course, having to soil our hands. So Chairperson, we appreciate the comments by honourable members, and we are available to engage, you know, on the issues going forward. Even if it comes to a point where we then say, Minister, having said that this report has been presented to you, having said that when this report was presented to you, you actually work on how best to deal with these issues, because the AG is the ear, the arm of all of us. They inform the executive. There will be no way that as ministers will have known what they reported if it was not because of their report. Then what happens is that we need to act. What happens is that we need to avoid the recurrence of such things. We don't have to come after the fact. We don't have to wait for the report. We have to actually deal with those things. Even if it means then coming forward in details to then outline in terms of what are the things that we are doing to respond to those issues, we are readily available to engage on these things. But then otherwise, thank you very much. You know, as Minister of Public Service and Administration, we know that when you recruit people where there are vacancies. And there's no vacancy for the bodyguard or the Minister of Public Service and Administration. So we don't even need volunteers.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Honorable Minister. Members, I think just to conclude the day, I would really want to agree particularly with the issue that you raised, Minister, of there is a time where we need to discuss thoroughly in terms of the powers of the Public Service and Administration Minister, the committee's role, the public service. I think in that one, Minister, the commitment that we can make, because we know it's a very critical issue, we think we should involve Parliament to come up with a seminar on that, where we are able to educate and actually amplify part of the roles, because that confusion comes from time to time, where, you know, we find that there's unclear understanding. We should engineer that process, particularly ourselves as this committee, because we know that many other things, you know, as people who do cross, cross-cutting issues, we do have that responsibility as well to ensure that we're very clear in terms of the, you know, the separation of powers and so on. That is very critical, and I must indicate to you, Minister, that is well taken, and we definitely think that we need a seminar as part of what we need to do in order to be clear what we are doing. It's an education that will be ongoing. It can't stop. We need to have some courses permanently with Palama, where other people will take some courses on governance, so that we sharpen the understanding. We're in advanced country in terms of establishing systems, in terms of where we are now, and we're growing all the time. We might lose on all the good work that we have advanced, you know, by being confused unnecessarily, and therefore, if you can't consistently sharpen our understanding and sharpen our role of oversight, we might sort of be blunt unnecessarily so, and we're going to take advantage
advantage of that. Yes, of course, as a committee, we started gradually. You know, we are at a particular level, I'm sure we're going to ask us. We started interacting with the entities, aligning objectives, you know, complaining about this and that. We moved to another level where we started to utilize the institution supporting democracy. The Public Service Commission has been key in terms of our work. Now, Auditor General, we are starting to utilize, you know, Auditor General of South Africa. Those are the instruments we're going to continuously utilize because they give us a better way of doing our work. And therefore, you know, they would not, they would tell you, the Public Service Commission, that we always say sometimes must zoom into your methodology, we must zoom into the overall objective, and so on and so on. So that there will be a continuous discussion in terms of your way of doing things, your methodology, your area of focusing, and so on and so on. Because we do have to work together, like the minister has said, in terms of realizing, you know, a clearer objective that the country is actually envisaging. And I must say that, members, we have started the area of anti-corruption, and we can see once we just start how huge this task is. It's a mammoth task. We are going to engage with it moving forward in terms of our plans. We're going to break those areas into various small areas where we can do that a job. We'll have all other departments that we have identified already here in terms of the work that we've pulled from all other committees. We'll have them here in terms of us getting a clearer way. And of course, members, I might not go in details into many other things. We did take much more longer. I would like at the end to just indicate that yes, other work ones we discussed show that the collaboration with NCOP, which we always talk about as a buzzword, has to be done. That's why we want to work with NCOP, go to provinces as well in terms of the kind of plans that will be involved in next year, in the coming third year of this fifth parliament, of this fourth parliament. Okay, so I would like to say to Minister Baloyi, together with Acting DG Governor, who's with him here, you know, I would really like to thank your presence, the Minister Baloyi, the DG, the Chairperson for Public Service Commission, Dr. Mgijima, with your DG, Mr. Popa. And then we had also, that way, whom we want to thank so much, Mr. Kevish Lakman, who was representing the Auditor General's office. Members as well, realizing the mammoth task, ladies and gentlemen, who've been part of this and went through with us throughout. As much as I'm thanking you, but I really want to amplify that we've got a bigger task in terms of doing the oversight and ensuring that those who intend to wake up tomorrow and you know, engage in corruption into this public service, it's not going to be possible because all of us, all institutions that are there, will do their work in such a way that we're going to make their life very difficult. And with that concluding note, I would like to thank all of you and hopefully we'll deal with this sketch quite correctly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Bafana, Bafana tonight.
So he's going to get it for me. Thank you.